live from Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Michael Carbajari, Amira Enya, Ron Sadek, Chris Veronis, and David Reist. Our program tonight, Comedy of Marlon Bass at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Happy Valentine's Day. Our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you would like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you would like to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And, of course, you can join us on the World Wide Web, beyondthebeltway.com, both the audio and video portion of the show. There are but 5 days to go before the South Carolina primary, and there are now 267 days to go before Election Day. And last night in South Carolina, there was a real knockdown, drag-out Donnybrook, and we'll talk about that as the program unfolds. But really, the last 48 hours, there is a bigger story in this country, and that was the sudden death of Antonin Scalia, a longtime conservative icon who passed away in Texas. And so we're going to spend the first portion of the program talking a little bit about the political ramifications of the death of this conservative icon, what it means. President Obama has already said that he wants to move forward with another nominee. And Mitch McConnell, who is the majority leader of the U.S. Senate, has already said that they're probably not going to move forward on having that vote. So, Mike, I want to begin with you. You are for Hillary Clinton. You were an attorney. You're also with the Board of Appeals, Board of Review in Cook County. What is your reaction? You're also an attorney. You're also an Italian. What is your reaction on the passing of Anton Scalia?
Well, obviously, your hearts go out to the Scalia family. His commitment and history of public service is well known. Every attorney who's read a Scalia opinion comes away impressed with how direct he is and how smart he is. And it's a real loss to the court. Whether or not you agree with him and his ideology, it's a real loss. I think the president is right in what he stated, that he has a commitment under the Constitution to fill that spot. There's a history in the past of filling spots during presidential elections. This isn't a first time we've done this before. We can walk and chew gum at the same time in this country. So this spot will be filled. Hopefully.
Amara Enya also joins us. You're for Bernie Sanders. You also are an attorney. Your reaction on the loss of the justice?
Well, Justice Scalia was an icon in jurisprudence. I mean, I remember reading some of his early opinions when I was a first-year law student. And again, like was said earlier, whether you agreed with his opinions or not, you were struck by just the way he articulated his stance on the issue. So you can always respect his stance on the issues, even if you don't agree with it. And so I think it's a huge loss to the legal community and to the country as a whole.
Ron Sadek joins us, Illinois State Representative. You co-chair the John Kasich campaign, but also an attorney. Your reaction?
Well, I agree with what's been said. I remember reading opinions of Justice Scalia in law school and being wowed by an immense vocabulary, an incredible grasp of deep legal jurisprudence. He used to have a WTTW TV show where he kind of took on the audience, a little bit like the prime minister's questions. And, the guy was brilliant. Again, whether you agreed with how a decision came down or not, he was a legal giant.
Should the president be able to put forward a nominee even in an election year?
Sure. And he will. The question is what the Senate will do. And there is some instructive history in the short term. People forget Ronald Reagan put Justice Kennedy up, but that was his third crack. Remember the term Bork? Borked became a verb.
Right.
Robert Bork was put up, and the Senate, I think it was largely Chuck Schumer, led the charge in shutting that nominee down because of his ideology, not his legal qualifications, because Bork was unquestionably qualified. Then the president went to Ginsburg, who kind of took himself out, and then Kennedy became the nominee in an election year. But the process took 18 months. So I know my friends on the left are going to scream and yell, the president should get his pick, and he will. What the Senate does is their prerogative.
Chris Veronis joins us. You are a non-attorney, but you're probably the closest thing to a very, very conservative businessman. Your reaction to the loss of this conservative icon, and whether or not, whether the president is going to get a chance to even have a vote on who he proposes.
Well, you're hearing it right at this table on both sides of the aisle. Just acknowledgement that he was a brilliant jurist, really bombastic, larger-than-life personality. He is going to be, when you think of the Supreme Court, Anton Scalia is going to be one of the handful of justices that are remembered. But I got to say, like, one of the best takeaways from Scalia in my mind is an article I read in the Washington Post today that despite being an arch conservative, one of his best friends was Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
True. Right. They used to go out socialize all the time.
And I think that speaks volumes about this man.
What are the other things from a political standpoint? I mean, when a justice dies, you expect the president of the United States to come forward with comments. He came across very quickly with some very flowery, very complimentary comments, even though, as a couple of people on this table disagreed with him. But as a constitutional law professor himself, he understood and appreciated. The thing that sort of surprised me is the quickness with which the majority leader, Mitch McConnell, jumped in and said, we're not going to have a vote on this. Was that a political mistake? It happened within hours after the man had been dead.
It's the first thing I saw on my breaking news updates after the death of Scalia. And I wonder if that was just sort of a zeal in the fog of war, kind of want to get the statement out first to kind of set the tone. And I wonder if in the and over the next few days and weeks that they'll walk back somewhat from that statement. I mean, at the end of the day, as far as I'm concerned, it's a moot point. There will be no justice confirmed in this Senate.
But what I was instantly reminded of was my first reaction was, oh my God. I mean, literally he was announced dead 3 or 4 hours ago. This is like ridiculous. The next thing was Mitch McConnell, I think, has a tenure. This is the guy who said years ago that his top goal was to make Barack Obama a one-term president. And that line was used over and over and over again in funders and mailing, and they beat him up on that issue. And to me, it was sort of the same thing. He made I think, a very stupid political statement so quickly.
Yeah. It was classless. It was tacky. I mean, if you see the statements that Senator Sanders put out initially, it was, giving credit and kudos to this legend who had just passed, which is what it should have been. The inability to see the humanity in the situation and to jump immediately to the politics of it, and not even just the politics of it, but the obstructionist stance that seems to be his forte, I thought was classless.
Ron, you agree with that?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with it, and I think I agree mostly with Chris that I think McConnell will have to walk back some of that sentiment. I think there were several expressions of political expressions on both sides of the aisle the minute the Scalia death was announced. I wish everyone would have taken a breath, but it just kind of speaks to the heightened partisan times we live in.
And the presidential candidates all jumped into
everyone
last
jumped
night
in.
The
and
debate.
Bruce, the man was a father of 9, a grandfather of 36, a larger-than-life figure. We probably should have just celebrated his life and the meaning of his life and not gotten into the deep weeds of politics so soon.
I could not agree with you more. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border to border. How do you weigh in? Did Mitch McConnell step too fast, too far? Your reaction.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us last night. We're now going to switch discussion to what happened in South Carolina last night and also what is likely to happen in the next 5 days. They vote next Saturday is when the Republicans will vote in South Carolina. And also next Saturday, the Democrats will be voting in Nevada in a caucus. So we'll talk about both. But let's take a look at what is happening in South Carolina. This, according to the Opinion Survey, or Opinion Savvy is the name of the poll. This has Donald Trump at 36%, Ted Cruz 19%, Rubio at 15%, Jeb Bush in fourth place at 11%, and John Kasich in fifth position at 9%. So, again, this was taken before last night's debate in Greenville and on CBS, and I want to get reaction I'm going to get reaction from our Republican, John Kasich. You're a supporter of, Ron, you're supporting John Kasich. Did John Kasich do what he had to do last night by being above the fray?
Absolutely. He had a great night. While Trump antagonized Bush, while Trump antagonized Cruz, while we saw Cruz versus Rubio part eight, I think, on immigration, Kasich soberly and very, I think, matter-of-factly set out what it is to be a statesman, what it is to be an experienced executive, what it is to be someone who's actually done something productive in Washington, D.C., and turned around a pretty important state.
Chris Voronis, you're for Marco Rubio. He had to have a comeback last night. I think he did, sort of a big comeback based on that huge fall the previous Saturday night in New Hampshire.
It was a comeback. Resilience. He's shown that. He's got the money to continue. So that's all he had to do. I agree with Ron. Kasich is I think personally has got the best record among all the GOP candidates. I just can't get past the fact, though, other than his fundraising problems, which are very real until he can get to the Midwest states, there's a little bit of that awkward kid on the school playground, calling for calm. There's sort of a Zen politics thing to him that you wonder if this guy can land a punch well. And even when he was just sort of trying to distance himself from all the name calling, which was ridiculous, it just didn't feel right.
To me, the startling thing about last night was the tremendous opportunity that Donald Trump had, and he blew it.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got a huge lead. And why he decides to pick a fight with the Bush family, with President Bush, to bring up 9/11, to bring up all these issues, to also respond to things that he had said in the past about John McCain, in a state that's filled with veterans and strong military commitment. I just didn't get it. Amari, again, I'm going to have you look across the aisle, but it defied political logic. And I know that Donald Trump has defied political logic again and again, and every political pundit ends up with egg on their face. But last night, I think we may have seen the straw that broke the camel's back. It was like in your face, and all he had to do was stay there and look presidential. He didn't look like he had spent one moment trying to look presidential. In fact, I think it was his worst debate.
I think so, too. In all honesty, I questioned whether or not he was intentionally throwing his whole campaign. I mean, it really seemed that outlandish, and it seemed like this might be intentional on his part to throw his entire campaign, because up until now, he has been able to ride this absurd wave. I mean, he became more popular the more outlandish things that he did. But last night, when he could have just cruised, he could have really solidified his position, he just went on this rampage that seemed almost to sabotage his own campaign.
Well, you are not the first to suggest or believe that this has all been an opportunity to wait for the right moment and blow yourself up. Because, I mean, last night was self-destruction. It wasn't demolition derby. Yeah. It was self-destruction. Your reaction?
The rules don't apply to Donald Trump. I mean, the rest of us who have been around campaigns and have run or been a candidate shake our heads. I mean, Cruz was up 7 points, and then Trump comes out and says he would throw every Muslim out. The next day, Cruz is down and Trump is up 4 points. The rest of us shake our head and say he says these horrible, offensive, mean things that would kill any candidate, and yet it gets him, it elevates him. I mean, the first two primaries haven't produced a winner for Republicans. They just produced wounded, poor, beat up candidates to go on to the next state. And I almost feel bad for my Republican friends because it seemed like their lesson in 2012 was, listen, we want to avoid Michelle Bachmann. We want to avoid Herman Cain. We're going to change the rules in the calendar. So they changed the rules in the calendar for the primary states, and that gives you Carly Fiorina and Ben Carson and now Donald Trump. I've never seen people been more excited to say their guy finished fourth, a strong fifth, a credible third. Look at the numbers. Donald Trump is the guy. And everybody else is trying to play these games and spin it to say, but he's well positioned with his fourth place finish.
But what? Well, no, but what? But my what about the point? I want to get this from Ron. What about the point is that you go out of your way to attack one of the most popular Republicans in the country, who is George Bush, not in the general public, not even with independents, but insofar as primary voters in South Carolina, who saved his political career in 2000. That you choose to take that moment, and not only do you say that you're opposed to the war, and by the way, there's a lot of Republicans that were opposed to the war. I'm not saying that his opposition to the war in Iraq and making the case for it was a bad thing to do. He's done it before. I think there's a lot of Republicans and certainly a lot of independents and certainly Democrats that agree with that. But then to go to the next step and to say, to pick up the talking points of the far left and saying that George Bush knew lied and knew about the attack on 9/11.
I don't want to get into Donald Trump's head. It's a dark and scary place. I don't want to get in there.
Were you shocked?
No, I wasn't.
You were not shocked by his statements.
No,
last
I'm with Amara. I have been of the political opinion that this is a guy that's been trying to disqualify himself. He offends women. He offends immigrants. He offends every category of voter needed to win even a Republican primary. He is an equal opportunity offender. And I can get deep in the woods and any type of conspiracy thought, but I will take issue with one thing Mike said. I think it's perfectly positioning for a candidate like Rubio or Kasich, less so for Bush, because this is a marathon, not a sprint. Things have changed. The dynamic has changed markedly between even Iowa, which as a Republican, I don't give a hang about. They don't pick presidents. This dynamic is fluid, and I think when we get to the Midwest states, I think Kasich will be in the game. I know Rubio will be. I think the herd will be thinner. I think Trump will be out. I think he will be exposed as a charlatan, as a game show host, as a disqualified person who has no business being on the dais, let alone in the White House.
Chris?
No question that this was the most unhinged you've seen Trump. And you could see it in his demeanor. There was just this shrill, negative look to him that you never saw before. What you had was aloofness and control, and this was just way different. So I think just given the primary, and not to handicap the race on the body of Anton Scalia, but this is a big break for Cruz in an evangelical state. The death of Anton Scalia puts the Supreme Court basically up for grabs. So now we have three branches of government that are up for election, and Cruz is the best positioned.
And he answered, he provided the best answer to that question.
Absolutely.
He knocked that one out of the ballpark.
A guy who's argued in the Supreme Court before, who knew Anton Scalia very, very well, the guy who can draw the most direct line between this election and religious voters in South Carolina, and it's Cruz.
Did Bush help himself in any significant way last night?
No. Unfortunately.
I don't think so. I think Bush has just been challenged from the very beginning. I think he's been trying to take the high road with Trump, but unfortunately Trump has his sights set on Bush and he's never bounced back from it.
We're going to take a call. Steve, listening to us in Palm Springs on KTPR. Go ahead. You're on the air, Steve.
Thank you very much, Bruce. Question for your panel. The death of Scalia, if the Republicans overplay this in the Senate, the Democratic energy base has been pretty low. But if you think of the gay voters, you think of minority voters who are going to see this as a real sign of disrespect to President Obama, don't you think that this could galvanize Democrats as well? And also, if they play it too far, it's going to come back and backbite them.
Yeah. I agree with that, Chris.
And that's why I think if that's the only reason why Mitch McConnell will walk this back, because this map is not favorable to Senate Republicans. And to have a 4-4 Supreme Court and have the single issue voters have got a cause to come out for,
right?
He's got to be careful, and Obama can make hay of this. Hillary can. Hillary is also a beneficiary of this with abortion,
right.
Pay equity issues. And so Mitch McConnell may have jumped the gun, and he's got to be
I think he made a huge mistake. And also, I mean, every 4 years at some point during the campaign, both sides will make a case that really the most important thing that a president can do is to appoint people to the Supreme Court. And that usually takes up about maybe a week and a half of energy and oxygen in a campaign, and everybody forgets about it. This is going to be a battle that is going on from – it already started – I mean, this goes into the campaign. I don't think the ability of a president to select a Supreme Court justice is ever going to be more important than what's going on right now, and will be going on between now and November.
And I was going to add to what Chris said.
And I'd like to ask your panelists, won't minority voters who may not have turned out in the same amount they did for President Obama, won't they see this as a sign of really disrespect, including a long list of stuff, like you said, McConnell wanting to stop his presidency, the guy wanted to stop him from Air Force One. I'd like to know whether the panelists think that this will also turn out more minorities.
Mike.
Definitely. I mean, I think it's going to turn out more minorities. It's going to turn out more women. I was going to say, as Chris said, you know, there are a number of issues that the court is considering right now and has to issue opinions on. It's been a very active court and considering these. So I do think it's going to increase turnout. One thing I was going to add to what Chris said as well, and I think another reason, Bruce, that McConnell may walk it back, usually you wait for the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee to speak first. That's the committee that the president's going to send his name to. The fact that McConnell got ahead of his own chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee tells you something. That person got on the phone yesterday with McConnell.
Steve, thanks very much. We've got to move on. Bruce Dumont in Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Chris Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. We thus far have been talking about Republicans, but again, the Democratic primary is going on, and it's far more contested than people thought maybe several months ago. They had their debate last week as well, and there was some blood drawn. Amara, Andy, you're here. You are not an official spokesman for the campaign of Bernie Sanders, but and by the way, we should mention that you, when you were first here, you were part of an effort to get Joe Biden to run. So you were not, you know, Amara come lately on this Bernie Sanders bandwagon. But do you believe that he is seriously challenging her? And can he be the nominee?
I definitely think that Senator Sanders is giving Hillary a serious run for her money. I think he has gained momentum. I think the debate performances have only serve to draw the distinction between what he represents as really talking about a different kind of politics, and he's a different kind of candidate, and what Hillary represents, which is the politics as usual. I mean, Hillary represents the corporate Democrats, and I think the millennials are really coming out strong for Senator Sanders. I think a lot of groups that are now energized that wouldn't otherwise have been if it were just Hillary.
Mike Carbonaggi, you are here for Hillary Clinton.
Bernie Sanders is a valuable part of the conversation for the Democratic Party. He represents an important voice, but so much of what he's talking about is single issue, income inequality, which Hillary has spoken to and addressed to and has a platform to. She agrees with many of the things that Senator Sanders has put forward, reforming Wall Street, pay equity. But she's also got a record of achievement. So, you know, as she likes to say, she's a progressive Democrat who's achieving. She's a successful progressive.
It depends on what you're talking to Hillary about, what her stance is. I mean, she has a record. She says that she has challenged Wall Street, but if you look at who her primary donors are, if you look at the speeches that she's given to that crowd and how she's pandered to that crowd, she has talked about her stance on many issues, and they've changed just depending upon the audience that she was speaking to and the time frame in which she was speaking. So it's hard for people to trust her candidacy because she comes across as someone who will say whatever it takes to whomever it takes to get the nomination or to win.
Mike, would you acknowledge that there's an enthusiasm gap for her?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the bedrock framework of the Democratic Party has been with Hillary, organized labor. The Congressional Black Caucus last week endorsed Hillary unanimously. Congressman Robin Kelly, Congressman Bobby Rush of Chicago, Luis Gutierrez has a Hispanic caucus behind Hillary as well.
When was the last time she drew 30,000 people to a crowd?
I am not. In Iowa, we had packed rooms.
Packed rooms are not 30,000 people.
And something else that needs to be pointed out is just all of the individuals that were named, Gutierrez, Congressman Rush. These are individuals who have been part of the establishment for so long that they are disconnected from many voters, an entire demographic of voters who simply don't resonate with Congressman Rush or Gutierrez or any of these individuals. The establishment, this is really a conversation about the establishment, sort of machine Democrats and individuals who are now coming into political awareness and who are finding that those values don't necessarily represent their day-to-day lives.
I love when Senator Sanders, who has been in this Congress for 25 years, 28 years, how many years has Senator Sanders been in as the outsider on the inside? 353 bills he's introduced. Three of them have passed. Two of them renamed post offices in Vermont.
He's making it work.
He has a voice. The audience who is with him is a valuable part of the Democratic Party. They always have been, but it's extremely myopic. You don't get, as President Obama has said, who, of course, President Obama asked Hillary Clinton to be part of his cabinet because they believed in her and trusted her and respected her to be part of his cabinet and to reform the State Department.
And they didn't want her to run against him.
You're in rooms that I'm not in, Bruce, because I wasn't in those rooms.
I've not
rooms.
Been in the room, but I think that case has been made.
But I think if you look what she did at the State Department and cleaning up the Rumsfeld-Cheney mess of the 8 years beforehand, it's a real record of achievement.
Ron is questioning that.
No, I just love the opportunity to opine on some Democratic politics.
Well, I know that.
Because, I mean, here's what I find fascinating. Mike was regaling us with why the Republican presidential nominees are in trouble because of potentially a long process. Let me be clear. I think their process might be longer. Bernie Sanders is not a figment. He's for real. He is generating ridiculous energy. And here's the thing, Bruce, that most Democrats do not want to talk about on the coronation path that Hillary thought she was on. The T word, the trust word, is absent for her. She's got a complete trustworthiness problem. There is no credibility with regular hardcore Democrats with Hillary Clinton.
90%, 90%
do not trust her. Not Republicans. These are Democrats we're talking about. You come on our side or independents, she is a long ways away from winning a general election against any Republican.
I just rather have Mike and Namara like talk it out.
I want to ask you a question. Here's my question that I asked last week. Last week I made the point is that, you know, there's a lot of Republicans that are chomping their bit. They can't wait. They can't wait for Bernie. But be careful of what you wish for. If Bernie Sanders became the Democratic nominee, that would be a monumental victory. Are you worried whoever your Republican nominee turns out to be will also then worry about whether or not Bernie Sanders has lit a prairie fire that is uncontrollable?
Nothing against Bernie, but it was a monumental victory to get George McGovern in there in 1972, too. And
yes, it
we
was.
Know how that ended, but I'll just
and
say,
Barry Goldwater in 1964.
Yeah, so I'll just say that a bald Jewish 74-year-old guy who's been in Congress for a quarter century,
who's an outsider,
who's taking on the best brand in Democratic politics could make it this competitive.
Bruce, I will tell you, Chris
is damning.
Chris is so excited about having a socialist who honeymooned in the Soviet Union, possibly running as the Democratic
nominee. I forgot
the
socialist part.
Socialist who honeymooned
bald Vermont,
75-plus years in Congress, but he's an
outsider. But wait a minute. All these guys, you are all, to some degree, professional politicians. You are certainly professional discussants of this matter. My point is, if he wins the Democratic nomination, here's something else. If he wins the Democratic nomination and there is this great increase in turnout, which he's expecting, there goes the House potentially and there goes the Senate. If there is a true revolution, they're not just going to stop the revolution by voting for Bernie Sanders. They're going to vote for every Democrat on that list, regardless of what state they're in.
I think it would certainly re-energize people in a way unlike since 2008 with the current president. What we get when we see Hillary Clinton is you can vote for Hillary Clinton, but that would be sort of the cynical. We know that whatever the other guy's saying is unrealistic. It's almost like a sad vote because you know that she's the more realistic candidate. But what we have with Senator Sanders that people have tapped into is that he doesn't sound like the typical politician. What he speaks about actually resonates with people, and it gives them hope that if they vote for him and if he does in fact win, then maybe there is some possibility of changing this political system in a way that actually benefits people.
You know, this election is so surreal in so many ways. So, I mean, especially with the Scalia thing yesterday.
Right.
There's not only a trust gap, there's an energy gap too, and it's coming from a 74-year-old guy, which is, again, I say damning because you cannot soft pedal what Amara is saying about Hillary. You know, a historic candidate who's running into problems that no one ever foresaw.
Lost the women's vote and the youth vote.
Well, we did see this in 2008.
Women and youth vote.
Obama did this to her. This is a little bit of a redo. Let's be clear.
Ron, go ahead.
Yeah, to me, this isn't totally unexpected. She ran into the same thing in Iowa with Obama. Now, she did a reversal in New Hampshire. There's no question about that. What I find fascinating on the D side of this aisle is that a lot of people thought this was going to be a coronation and that she had all the structure, the infrastructure, all the right people in play. They forgot the voters. And I think that's what Amara's talking about. They forgot regular voters. What's going to be fascinating to me is the SEC. How Senator Sanders does in the southern states, because to Chris's point, he doesn't demographically fit. But the good news is nothing about this election has been predictable or reliable, and everything that we think that should happen naturally, it's almost gone the other way.
And when you say demographically fit, I agree with that. But the point is, I don't think it means anything.
It might not.
Because what's turning people on in Iowa and New Hampshire, does that mean that people who are young voters who live in the South aren't going to react to the same thing? That blue-collar Democrats aren't going to react the same way?
No, I just think it's a fascinating contrast that we've seen some of the old rules shattered, and that's, I mean, it gives Sanders hope.
The word coronation has been thrown out here a lot. If really Hillary Clinton were here, she would say, I never have been coronated to anything, and I never thought.
She's told to say that.
I've never been coronated to any of this. She has learned through success and failure how hard it is to be in the public arena. To my Republicans, I would say that they have beat her up over the years so that if there are questions about her, nobody has a thicker skin and is going to be in this longer. Nobody has had to take a punch and learn how to bounce back.
Sometimes when you were a candidate, when someone supports you, they say things that are great. Sometimes they say things that are not so great. Madeleine Albright's comment about there's a special place in hell for women, which she took back in an op-ed piece in the New York Times. That's a good catch back. When you heard that, Mike, you're a politician. What did you react when you heard Madeleine Albright say that?
So I'm an elected official, the politician thing here. I've heard her say that for over 20 years. She's been saying that as kind of a regular part of her stump speech with different things.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have said it. I thought it was the wrong thing to say, and I think this gets back to something we were talking about before in terms of the changing view. There are a lot of young women who are feminist who are did not go through what Hillary Clinton and Madeleine Albright did to get to where they are right now, and they view being a feminist through a very different lens. And it was she shouldn't have said what she said.
Amara, we're going to get your reaction when we come back. 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. From coast to coast and border to border and around the world on BeyondTheBeltway.com. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida, so why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, 1-800-723-8289. Before we go too much further, I want to welcome new listeners or re-welcome back new listeners to Beyond the Beltway tonight. WKBN AM 57 in Youngstown, Ohio. They were with us for a long, long time. Had to take a few months off, but they're back tonight. WKBN in Youngstown, Ohio. And my thanks to Dan Rivers and Bill Kelly for putting us back on the air. And as I've said from the many times that I did remote broadcasts from there, if you draw a circle about 200 miles around Youngstown, Ohio, you will find out where America's elections are won or lost in western Pennsylvania and eastern Ohio. And again, it's great to be back on the Big 57, AM 57, and we look forward to getting calls from them. 1-800-723-8289. And another programming note, next Sunday night, both the radio and television version of Beyond the Beltway will be brought to you live from Bradenton, Florida. We're going down there to do the show. This is the day after the South Carolina primary. So whoever wins that primary is going to be a big, big story. But most importantly, another big story is going to be, does Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio, who survives that battle in South Carolina? We will be in Florida with Florida experts talking about the future of their political careers. And, of course, the day before, there will also be the important Nevada caucus with the Democrats. So we'll have lots to talk about live Sunday night, February 21st, live from Bradenton, Florida. Let's go to Nick, listening to us in Chicago, online tonight. Go ahead. You're on the air, Nick.
Bruce, you listen to me?
Yes, well, I am. Go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to say that Secretary Clinton lost me in the last two debates.
Why?
Because she was saying that Senator Sanders' platform was too ambitious. And after the debate was over, and previously in the prior debate, she said the same thing. And I started thinking to myself, is that what I want in somebody who I elect? It's somebody who basically gives in to the fight before the fight even starts. And I thought, I just can't vote for the woman.
Mike, let's let Mike Carbonaggi respond to you and try to get the vote back. Mike?
Well, I would say that if you look at her career, one thing that's come true about Hillary Clinton is she's learned how to be an effective and successful progressive. And I would just point to, for example, 1994. We all remember during President Clinton's first term in office that Hillary led the effort for universal health care. It didn't work out well. We lost the House. Democrats lost control of the Senate and the House. The White House said that they didn't want to deal with health care anymore. Hillary Clinton reached out to Orrin Hatch and to Ted Kennedy and said, we can continue working on this. And they got the Children's Health Insurance Program, CHIP, through, which reduced the rate of uninsured children by half and put 8 million kids back, gave health insurance to 8 million kids. The lesson there is what we're seeing now. It was politically unpopular. She took some lumps, but she still succeeded and got a program through. All due respect to what Senator Sanders is saying about free health care for everybody, free college tuition for everybody, great ideas, very thin or non-existent on how we achieve them. They sound like great ideas. Listen, talk of revolution is easy and it feels good, but real effective change is hard.
Nick, thank you for your call. Amar, I want to go back to the question we posed right before the break, and that is the comments from Madeleine Albright. There are a lot of women. A lot of women, the majority of women in New Hampshire, supported Hillary Clinton. How important is a woman president to you? It must not be that important right now.
It's important. It's important, but it doesn't trump the values. And I think something that's important, especially to the younger demographic of voters, particularly millennials, is that we're more values-based voters as opposed to identity politics voters. And so that was why the comments that Madeleine Albright made and the comments that Gloria Steinem made really were offensive, quite frankly, because it's essentially saying that feminism is really about the choice, right? The choice to be able to vote for a woman or to vote for the better candidate, or if the better candidate is a woman, fine. It's not to say that you blindly support someone just because they're a woman, or in the case of the president, just because he's black means that we should support him. That kind of thinking is insulting.
Do you believe, however, that also with young people of all generations, not just this generation, they tend to want to follow the crowd? And how much of the appeal of Bernie Sanders is that he's the trendy guy to be with? Maybe if you go too deep in a conversation with a millennial, they don't really know why they like Bernie, but they know that everybody in their sorority or fraternity although I'm maybe not too many frat boys are for Bernie Sanders, they're probably for Donald Trump. But the reality is, how much of it is just about he's hip, he's the place to be right now, he's the new iPod?
I actually don't think that's much of a factor. I mean, you have a 74-year-old white man from Vermont who is getting a lot of support from African-Americans, from young people of all races. And I think it's more because of his message. Number one, what he's talking about. And number two, his consistency. So when he talks about income inequality, that's something that hits us very hard. And so people are, I think he's resonating because of his message.
Let's go to Stan in Richmond, Virginia. Go ahead. You're on the air listening on XM Satellite Radio tonight. Go ahead.
Hey, guys, a great show.
Thanks.
I'm wondering what the panel thinks. Is Trump a one-time phenomena, or has he changed the rules of campaigning forever so that we may have kind of a two-level campaign going forward, celebrities and then the traditional candidates? And Donald Trump, not only has he violated every rule as far as what he says, he's violated a lot of the rules when it comes to ground game and how you act. So is he a one-time thing, or is Kanye West in our future, perhaps?
Ron Sandick.
Wow. God, I hope it's a one-time phenomenon in air quotes. Yeah, all of a sudden every celebrity now is threatening to run for president. I don't know that everyone wants to be a self-funder, though, and I think sometimes the allure of the race – goes away, but I do not.
That's a big appeal.
I think there's a lot of downside too, but yeah, there's an appeal to it. But I still think what Amara thinks, that this has all been one ruse and an attempt to disqualify that, unfortunately, people haven't caught on to yet or refuse to catch on to. But I do not think this is a trend.
This phenomenon has happened before, not so much with a celebrity, but again, you know, look what Pat Buchanan.
Sure.
Pat Buchanan got a third of the vote against
Ross
Bush.
Perot.
Ross Perot. I mean, Ross was a little bit less than that, but there's 30%, 33% of the electorate at any time is angry.
We've had third parties before. Party insurgents. This is using the classic two-party system, right, though, and abusing it.
We got to pause. Back shortly from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. From Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with Beyond the Beltway, and joining us on this segment is Phil Kent. He is the publisher of the Southern Political Report. It's been around for many, many years. He joins us from Atlanta, Georgia tonight. And Phil, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway.
Hey, thank you, Bruce. Glad to be with you.
I want to just go over for those people that may have just tuned in. This is a opinion savvy poll of the South Carolina primary, which has Donald Trump at 36%, Ted Cruz at 19%, Marco Rubio in third place at 15%, Bush at 11%, and Kasich at 9%. It was from February 10th and 11th. It does not include the debate performance last night. I would assume there'll probably be a couple of other polls that will be coming out in the next week. But let me ask you the question based on what has been discussed here in Chicago. In your view, how dramatic was the debate last night in Greenville, and what significant changes, if any, do you think we will see in the next week?
Well, Bruce, as we know, folks who watched it realized there were a lot of fireworks, and there was a lot of shooting at Donald Trump, who, of course, is the front runner, as you're citing. And I think the big news was the throwing of the punches between Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz. They obviously have to do very well in South Carolina. I think it's interesting, there was also a CBS News Battleground poll that was taken the same time as the Opinion Savvy poll, and it was very interesting. It says that by a 4-to-1 margin, South Carolina Republicans describe themselves as anti-establishment. So that's what's fueling the Trump campaign, and that's what's hurting people like Jeb Bush and a John Kasich.
Were you surprised that Donald Trump went after George W. Bush in such a vicious way last night?
I was surprised. Putting on a consultant's hat for a minute, I would have told him, along with most others probably, that, you know, he's already down in the polls in South Carolina. Why bring all that up? But Donald is Donald, and I guess George Bush is establishment, and from what I just told you, he may be liked by a lot of people and respected, but this year, as we know in both Democrat and Republican contests, the establishment is not doing too good.
Mm-hmm. What is Nikki Haley doing in that primary?
You know, I think Nikki is trying to be basically a friend to all, although, you know, she took some shots at Donald Trump early on. You remember her speech in January. Mm-hmm. I think what's interesting in South Carolina, though, is the lieutenant governor Henry McMaster is for Trump. And so Trump has kind of a, ironically, an establishment person, a very high official that's supporting him.
Now, again, nationally, the most famous politician out of South Carolina is Lindsey Graham. He did not do well in the primaries. And when he was last reelected, it was a hotly contested race. But how popular is Lindsey Graham within the rank and file Republican in the Palmetto State?
It's a good question, Bruce. And I think that he is very personable. I've known him. I used to be editorial page editor of the Augusta Chronicle right on the South Carolina border, and his old congressional district bordered mine. A very nice man, has good constituent service, is basically an old Reagan conservative, but he's really upset a lot of South Carolinians, and I think nationally he didn't do well because he has been in favor of comprehensive immigration reform, which included amnesty and a path to citizenship for illegals. And while he's very sincere and passionate about that, that's not going over well with the Republican primary electorate this year, as we all can see.
Now, all the analysis about this from the National Observers have been, they make the point that there's a lot of evangelicals in South Carolina. And in the next breath, they say that the history down there is of bitter primaries. How do you explain to the audience how a state that is so filled with evangelicals is also filled with political venom?
Well, it's an interesting thing, and I've watched South Carolina ever since the 1980 election, and you're absolutely right. There's toughness, there's brass-knuckle politics, and there's a lot of evangelicals in the state, especially in that Greenville-Spartanburg area, but I have to go back, Bruce, to the anger factor here in both parties, exemplified by, of course, Donald Trump. People are upset, and they feel like wages are stagnant. This is what Trump and Bernie Sanders are saying. So you're seeing this on both sides. And so you are seeing the blood flow again and the fist flying.
I want to talk about the Democrats a little bit. Their primary will be the following week, the following Saturday. But tell us a little bit about what's going on between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Everyone has said that this is the firewall because of the large African-American turnout and vote in South Carolina, is that Bernie Sanders wouldn't have much room to grow down there. Do you see it that way?
Well, that's been the conventional wisdom, that Sanders can't do well. I don't see it that way. I see his numbers growing. In fact, just last Thursday, again, I'll refer to that CBS News Battleground poll. Hillary had 59%. Bernie had risen to 40%. The firewall may be crumbling if Bernie keeps doing well with the millennials. We hear about that. And, of course, we hear about Hillary's legal troubles. They aren't... I mean, it's incredible when you look at all polling that when it comes to honesty and trustworthiness, a startling 90% of Democrats really worry about that.
Chris Veronis is a Republican. He has a question for you, Phil.
Sure.
Phil, just based on the last 24 hours, and specifically I'm talking about Trump's performance and the death of Anton Scalia, who has right now or who can create momentum toward next Saturday? Which of the Republican candidates?
Chris, I see Ted Cruz, the one poised to try to give Trump the most trouble in South Carolina, and as you go forward to March 1st in the several states of the SEC primary. He does have a good ground game. I think a lot of observers have noted this, and I do know that he's got a good ground game in South Carolina and in Georgia, where I live. Now, Trump is stepping it up, too. I think he learned a lesson from Iowa when he came in second, and his ground game was excellent in New Hampshire. And as you probably know, Chris, he won a wide range of demographic and ideological groups, topping the field among both men and women, voters under 64.
It's a clean sweep.
Voters with or without a college education. So Trump's strong, and I don't know if the debate has hurt him that much, but watch out for Ted Cruz.
Mike Carbajani is also here, and he supports Hillary Clinton, and he has a question or comment.
Hi, Phil. Just following up Chris's question or comment as well, you know, I've heard a lot about There's going to be three Republicans who come out of South Carolina. At this point, who do you think those three Republicans are?
I would say that Marco Rubio did himself very well in the last debate. I think he's recovered from the week before. And so let's again give the big three there, Trump, Cruz, and Rubio. I just don't see John Kasich or Jeb Bush having much traction there, Mike.
We're going to pause. We have a representative or a supporter of John Kasich here. He wants to maybe challenge you a little bit on that. 1-800-723-8029. Phil Kent is with us. He publishes the Southern Political Report. And when we come back, we're going to look beyond South Carolina, and we're going to look to the SEC primary on March 1st, and that's all about the South. More coming to you live from Chicago.
Eight years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont, back in Chicago. We were just talking about the branding. Chris, put on the not all of what you just said, but put on the record what you believe to be a possibility with Donald Trump.
Well, this is sort of the black helicopter in me, the black helicopter guy. But I just happen to be one of these people who believes that deep down inside, Donald Trump does not want this. And this is about a savvy business person just looking ahead to the next reality show, the next clothing line that's manufactured in China. I mentioned earlier on one of the breaks, there was a great article in Politico that talked about how unserious Trump was about this. His advisors had to push him in to actually make the announcement. The problem is Trump's done so well. Who knew that empty sound bites could get him this far? And now Trump himself is pot committed, basically.
Yeah.
And that's
but again,
the scary thing.
Unless you have more, that's what was going through my mind last night as I watched the debate. It's self-destruction. And how much more self-destruction can you do by not, you know, I would like to see some example. When I watch Donald Trump in any debate, that he has listened to someone who has told him to tone it down and be presidential. That's what I thought I was going to see last night.
Why should he, Bruce? Why should he? Because everything he's doing right now is working. Whenever he makes an offensive comment, people like us go, that's the moment. The next day his poll numbers go up.
Unbelievable.
So that
I think
the
thing about
drop.
Bush and 9/11 last night, I have not said that this was the straw that broke the camel's back in any other of the absurd things he said.
It should be death by a thousand cuts, right?
It should be, but we'll see what happens. Phil Kent joins us. He's joining us from Atlanta, and he is the publisher of the Southern Political Report, which is a very respected, been around for a long, long time, founded by our longtime friend Hastings Wyman. And my question to you, Phil, is I want to take just a moment here and share with the audience what's coming up on March 1st. It's being referred to as the SEC primary. And on March 1st, listen to all the states that are going to vote on one single day. Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Colorado, Georgia, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, Vermont, Virginia. Now, as I look at all of those states, with maybe one or two exceptions, Massachusetts being one, I see states that might be tailor-made for Ted Cruz, because in many of these states, evangelicals also have a pretty good hold on the electorate. Do you see it differently?
No, actually, I would tend to agree with you. And all of those states except Texas that you're talking about are proportional. They're not winner-take-all. We don't kick into the winner-take-all until we get to the 15th. Florida one on March 15th.
Right, and Illinois and Ohio.
That's right. And then so you know, if Trump keeps going, he's still going to be getting a lot of the delegates, especially in these states that they – when the congressional delegates get a majority, they get the delegates. So, but I think that's where you're right. I think Cruz would have a chance. And even someone like a Rubio or a Kasich, if they could break through in these proportional primaries, they could hang in there into Florida.
Yeah, I think that Kasich, more so even than Rubio, if he's got to stay alive until there's a primary in Michigan on the 8th, and then on the 15th it's Ohio and it's Florida and it's Illinois. Those are big ones for him on the 15th. And we have the co-chair of the Illinois Kasich campaign who wants to sort of elaborate on that. And maybe,
well, I mean, that's a strategy. Yeah. I will note, I don't know if you know that, the biggest paper in Texas came out and endorsed Kasich, not Cruz. So I'm not going to, you know, be under any false illusions that he's going to win Texas. But I think he'll be competitive in a couple of those SEC states. His whole MO is to get to the Midwest, where he thinks.
But he should also do well in Boston, in Massachusetts.
I think he'll do fine in Massachusetts. I think he'll do well in Minnesota. And I think he'll do surprisingly well in a couple of the southern states, too.
Virginia as well.
I think he'll do great in Virginia.
Yeah.
But to get a Midwest governor that's successful in the Midwest states is his whole game plan. And I think, you know, money is going to be a problem, but he's been picking up. You know, last night's debate was a good night for John Kasich, mm-hmm. as was the New Hampshire debate. He's finding his sweet spot, and the crowd's thinning, yet he's got, a lane. He never had a lane before. I think he's got a lane.
Phil, tell us if you can, what's going on with the Jeb Bush donor class? I mean, they've spent a lot of money. Right now, the only thing they have to crow about is finishing fourth in New Hampshire. Again, Bush at the moment is in fourth place in the poll that we referenced. Is South Carolina have to be the breakthrough point, or does he have enough money to limp through March 1st as well? And as you say, pick up a few votes here and there.
Well, your first point, I know in Atlanta, the Bush donor class is very nervous, and his fundraising is down. Now, yes, he still has a good war chest, and I believe he wants to be a big player in the March 1st SEC primary. So you'll see Jeb there. I don't know if he wants to get humiliated in his own home state of Florida.
Right.
He's not looking good at all there. I will say
nor is Rubio. I mean, that's a Trump state at the moment.
Nor is Rubio. That's right. I think that Kasich did have a very good debate night. I would agree with that. I said earlier, though, that especially in the South, the anti-quote-unquote establishment vote is very high in these Republican primaries. And if I was a Kasich consultant, I would advise him to get a little more anti-establishment, talk more about border security and those type of themes that Cruz and Trump talk about.
You agree with that?
Well, it's funny. Kasich's immigration policy, which, you know, I think a guy like Cruz attacks him on, has been, one, secure the border. And then he has this sensible solution that says, look, we're not going to deport 11 million people. There is no math in deporting 11 million people. Instead, you know, maybe a fine, taxes, and a path towards a legal, not citizenship, but a legal authorization. It sounds too darn rational for some people, but I think it will finally absorb, because there is no exiting 11 million people. It's not going to happen.
Phil, where is the political leadership in Georgia? Who are they lining up behind at the moment?
Well, the polls in Georgia show Trump way ahead, and so he will take the Georgia on March 1st when we vote. He'll take that primary. It's just a question of can he hit in the late 40s or something
who's,
like that.
Who's Ralph Reed for? Who's Ralph Reed for?
You know, Ralph has always been close to Jeb Bush. I don't believe he's actually endorsed anyone. I would guess, and Ralph's a friend of mine, I would guess he'd be for Jeb out of loyalty to the Bush family.
And Rubio, again, the other battle, obviously, that people are going to be watching throughout all of March is whether or not Rubio can outlast Bush. They both can't I don't think that Bush and Rubio can both be standing on their feet come March 15th.
Agreed. And they both have money. The momentum is definitely with Rubio right now. And something tells me that if Bush has a dismal finish in South Carolina, which it's trending that way, that he will do the statesman-like thing and he will drop out.
Do you think that's
I would agree with that.
Go ahead.
No, this is Phil. I would agree with that.
Yeah, Phil. Yeah, because, again, it would seem to me that it would be more embarrassing to Jeb Bush to lose a state that he was the governor of than Rubio. I mean, it's both of them would have a lot of egg on their face. Mike's got a comment for you.
Hey, Phil, I had a question for you. Some of the folks who got out, Rand, Christie, who got out.
Carly.
But Rand being from Kentucky, where have their folks gone that you've seen?
You know, in Georgia and South Carolina, it's been splintered. They have been going to various camps. I see Cruz picking up some of those people. Trump may be getting some of the tough Christie people, but I think Cruz may be benefiting.
Tell us, let's look ahead on the Democratic side. When you look at this breakdown, do you think this is overwhelmingly a pro-Hillary field or landscape that we're going in on March 1st, or do you see that as split as well? I mean, certainly with Massachusetts could be a big boon to Bernie Sanders, and obviously Vermont, you know, votes then as well. But I mean, where do Texas Democrats go?
Well, I'll chime in. I think that. Hillary still has a lock, and as we all know, a lot of the superdelegates are also for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So she's looking good in Texas and a lot of these SEC primary states. I'll throw this out to you guys, though. What if you get a surprise from Bernie Sanders soon? What if he floats the name of a very prominent African-American as maybe his vice presidential running mate? Could that be a game changer? I don't know.
Amara, what do you think of that? Does he need a sort of a surprise?
Well, I don't know that he needs a surprise, but who he picks as his running mate will factor very much into his credibility or his ability to be successful, I think. That's the big question. But as far as South Carolina goes, I mean, the recent endorsement by the Congressional Black Caucus coming out, and then there were some comments made by John Lewis, who's very esteemed, legendary. But unfortunate. Ben Jealous came out for Sanders. He's gotten a lot of significant African American support, and then you have these elder statesmen, Cornel West, who was here in Chicago when Senator Sanders came. But you have these other statesmen in John Lewis making comments, basically questioning the legitimacy of Senator Sanders' commitment to civil rights, which I thought were unfortunate.
Yeah. Phil Ken, thank you very much for joining us, the publisher of Southern Political Report for many, many years. We will touch base with you again between now and March 1st, and we thank you for joining us on Beyond the Beltway tonight.
Well, thanks to everyone.
I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8029. When we come back, more talk about South Carolina with another live report.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8029. We're going to reach out now and find out what's happening in the Palmetto State, South Carolina. They've got their big Republican primary this coming Saturday night, Democrats a week later. And we are joined by David Priest, and he is the morning man on WRNN-FM radio from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, and that's a member of the Beyond the Beltway Network. David, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway tonight.
Well, thanks for having me. Happy Valentine's Day and happy President's Day, a day early.
That's right. And everybody wants to be president, or at least half the people in that state want to be president right now. Now, as you look at the race, both the Republicans and Democrats, let's spend a moment talking about the Democrats first, because we've talked a lot about the Republicans. Do you get much sense in Myrtle Beach as to whether or not Hillary Clinton has this overwhelmingly lead that people think that she has?
Well, Hillary Clinton has spent a lot of time saying that the South is going to be her firewall. And if you look at all the numbers from just around South Carolina, plus some of the other states in our area, Georgia, I've seen polls in North Carolina just across the border from Myrtle Beach, her home state of Arkansas, some of the other southern states, it kind of holds true. She does have a almost seemingly insurmountable lead in all of those states, including South Carolina. Polls that I've seen in the last couple of days here, one has her up by as many as 38 points in South Carolina. Another one as little as 20. When I say as little as 20, that doesn't seem like maybe it's lessening the gap a little bit, but after her performance in Iowa, where she essentially tied, and then where she got trounced in New Hampshire, a lot of people in the South who had never heard of Bernie Sanders before all of a sudden started taking a look. So her firewall might be breaking down just a little bit. And since we've still got another 2.5, well, you know, another 2 weeks almost full until we get to the Democratic primary coming up on the 27th, there's a lot of time for Bernie Sanders to make up some ground.
I want to ask you to sort of place in context for those listening around the country. Tell us a little bit about Myrtle Beach and how that region of the state differs from maybe other regions. Is it more conservative? Is it less conservative? And tell us how the geography of the state breaks down politically.
It's almost the further you get away from the ocean, the more conservative it gets, until you get up to the corner where, you know, Clemson, Greenville, Spartanburg is the most conservative part of the state. The reason it's probably a little bit more, I don't want to say liberal, more moderate or more mixed, at least on this part of the state, is because it's a big tourist area, it's a big retirement area. We have a lot of people who move down here from northern tier states that either are unionized, maybe a little bit more blue or purple. So we have a bigger mix here along the coast where we are in Myrtle Beach. But the further you get inland, the more right it goes.
Now, according to the polls, Donald Trump has a big lead in the state. And yet there was the debate last night, which many people are suggesting, including myself earlier in this broadcast, that maybe Trump went too far in going after George W. Bush in a very vicious way, tying him to 9/11, saying that he lied about weapons of mass destruction, and taking up some points that are viewed as sort of left-wing talking points. Did you hear what he had to say last night? Do you react the same way, or am I overstating that rubbing George W. Bush's face in the mud might have some political currency there?
Well, there's a lot of ways to look at that, because I agree with you in one sense that I think the average person out there will say, ooh, he was, you know, getting a reaction. He was taking actually what was maybe more of a Democratic talking point and running with that, and that's what people were saying maybe he shouldn't have been doing. The only thing about that is that Donald Trump has pretty much defied all odds and all convention as far as this primary run is concerned, because it doesn't really matter what he says, his people are still going to be behind him. So I don't know if that's really going to cost him as far as any numbers are concerned. That remains to be seen 1 week from yesterday.
People that that you talk to on the street and also that call in the show, I mean, is there a strong preference for any one of the Republican candidates that you talk with on a daily basis?
Well, the top two that you're seeing in the polls are usually the top two that get mentioned. Donald Trump has gotten strong support from them even before he announced that he was going to be running. We had a chance to have him on the air with us when he was here in town last January or February, and even at that time he said that he was toying with the idea, and I didn't think that he was going to pull the trigger on the campaign, but decided to go ahead and go for it. But even at that time, there were a lot of people in this area who were saying, yeah, that's a guy that I might be able to get behind. And, you know, if you look at the numbers right now, the two people that get mentioned most are Trump and Cruz. We were getting a lot of Carson supporters early on, but obviously, as you've seen, his support has kind of waned quite a bit in the last couple of weeks.
Is it Trump's tone, or is it the fact that he's self-funding his campaign, or he has real strong opinions on trade? Is it illegal immigration? I mean, which of the many potential appeals of Donald Trump do you think is the one that's most prevalent in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina?
I think the first thing you mentioned is tone. I think the fact that he's got a very strong tone, his convictions are incredibly strong, and he sticks with them. He will not back down from anything he says, even if it's proven to be untrue. He'll still stick with it, and even though that has sunk candidates in the past, for some reason, that's not sinking Donald Trump. His followers are staying right behind him steadfastly, and they're not going anywhere, it doesn't seem like.
Chris Veronis, who is a supporter of Marco Rubio, has a question for you, David.
Sure.
David, I got to ask, if religious voters hold so much sway over the South Carolina primary, I've just got to wonder, how are they going to take a guy like Donald Trump with the vulgarities?
What is his appeal, yeah.
The vulgarities, going after George W. Bush.
Two Corinthians.
His thoroughly offensive nature. I got to add, too, also the kind of condescending way he talks to religious voters, confusing Bible verses and something that you could easily see through.
And describing communion as that little cracker and the little glass of wine. Not exactly reverential.
The cracker, yeah.
David, what's the answer?
I wish I knew the answer. That's the problem, Chris, is that I'm actually asking the same questions that you are on a daily basis, and I can't figure it out. The same people who, if the average person got up on the stage like a college-age person and repeated any of the words that Donald Trump would say, they would say that person needs to be kicked out of school, they need to be reprimanded, they need to be punished in some way. Yet when Donald Trump says it, they go, he was just in the moment. He's okay. Not a problem. And they've all seemed to brush it aside. As far as evangelicals are concerned, that's where the real fight would come in South Carolina, because I think the people, as I mentioned, in the upstate, which are a little bit more to the evangelical side, those seem to be more Cruz supporters. Those seem to be more Carson supporters. So, you know, Rubio has gotten some pretty good run, and his numbers are still looking pretty good in South Carolina. But that's what we'll have to see come out in the wash this coming Saturday.
Is Rubio more? Is his appeal more suburban and family and maybe white collar workers? Is that where you think his appeal is coming?
Hard to say.
And also the fact that he's 44 years old. I mean, I think that's a big appeal for Marco Rubio.
I think that you're right about that. Obviously, and all things being equal, if Trump was not in this race, you know, the talk about Marco Rubio being, quote-unquote, the establishment candidate probably wouldn't be happening, because he's actually very conservative if it weren't for the whole immigration thing that's hanging over his head. So I think that the people who do not like Trump and the people who think that Cruz is a little bit too more evangelical for them or too confrontational or just, as Donald Trump would say, a nasty, unlikable guy, mm-hmm. I think Rubio is the next person on the list that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just thinking is that the state is known for sort of nasty politics, and Donald Trump is saying that Ted Cruz is nasty, I'm wondering whether that's viewed as a compliment by some people down there. But although I would be surprised if it's viewed as a compliment by born again Christians. That's the fact that he did better than Ted Cruz in New Hampshire, with evangelicals or born agains. I'm stunned by it. Unless it's just the nature of evangelicals to forgive. I mean, certainly there's an element of forgiveness in that, but some of these comments are pretty rough.
Well, you know, they're obviously, I mean, the language that he said that he promised that he won't use anymore, he'll be more presidential in the future. And, you know, as far as not really getting any kind of religious questions correct, again, that would have sunk a lesser candidate. in years past, but I think his charisma has pulled him through, and a lot of people are willing to overlook some of those things and go, that's just Donald being Donald.
I observed something last night, even in the moment of silence for Justice Scalia, he was the only one that did not close his eyes or bow his head, which, again, you know, if you're not really religious, you probably don't quite know what to do.
David, I have a question for you.
Sure.
Obviously, I'm a Kasich supporter, and I thought he obviously did pretty well in New Hampshire. He didn't really have apparatus set up in South Carolina. As I see it, the Rubio-Bush-Kasich lane, if you will, is pretty crowded. If Bush doesn't have a good day next Saturday, what does that mean to you? Where do you see the Bush candidacy going if Kasich and Rubio beat him in South Carolina?
Well, it's hard to say. I know that Bush has a ton of money, and he's spending a lot of it. He spent $36 million in New Hampshire, and he's spending a lot. I'm not registered as a Democrat or Republican, and I've been getting Bush money sent to my, not money specifically, but I mean all the anti-Rubio ads, et cetera, sent to my house on a regular basis. But as far as Kasich is concerned, I mean, his numbers have tripled in South Carolina since he got the New Hampshire win. So people are taking a look at him right now. But as far as what's going to happen between the three of them, I agree this might be a turning point for at least one or two of them. If Kasich doesn't do well here, he might have to look otherwise.
David Priest, morning talk show host on WRNN-FM in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, joining us tonight on Beyond the Beltway. Our thanks to all of our guests for being with us this evening as well. Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thank you for joining us tonight.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv. Back in Chicago, Mike Carbonaggi is here. Did I get it right finally?
In the spirit of Antonin Nino Scalia, yes. The complicated Italian names, yes.
You were for Hillary Clinton, and again, you were saying during the break, Hillary Clinton is coming to Chicago to not just raise money. She's going to talk to the real people here.
No, we're doing a rally, doing a Get Out the Vote rally, 44th and MLK, the Parkway Pavilion.
Parkway Ballroom.
Parkway Ballroom, I'm sorry. Ballroom, 11 o'clock. Everybody come, please.
And the purpose of this is to not only get out the vote, but also because it's in the South Side, it's to engage the African-American community?
Yeah.
Is that
no,
part
we're
of
opening
it?
Up – Hillary's opening up an office on the North Side, but also on the South Side, campaign office. Listen, I mean, it's not a coronation. We don't take anything for granted. We've got
and it's going to be Wednesday morning.
Wednesday morning, 11 o'clock.
Now, the Bernie Sanders campaign opened its – they had an office or a rally yesterday, which I had stopped by. It was 8 minutes from my house. I went over there. He wasn't there, obviously, because he's elsewhere. But again, there was quite a bit of excitement in that audience. And there was something in that said by Tara Stamps, who is one of the delegates. She's an activist in Chicago. One of the strongest statements made, she reminded everybody that Rahm Emanuel, the mayor of Chicago, who at the moment is immensely unpopular with large segments of Chicago, primarily African-Americans, she reminded everyone that he was a superdelegate for Hillary, and she raised the possibility that if you want to send a message to Rahm Emanuel, you're for Bernie because it will embarrass Rahm Emanuel in Chicago. How powerful is that message with African Americans?
It can be.
By the way, we should mention to the audience, it's also tied into a hotly contested primary for state's attorney, where the Hispanic state's attorney is basically been turned on by the African-American community and rejected by the Democrats for fear because of the way she handled the Laquan McDonald shooting, which I think people around the country may be familiar with. So right. That's a very hot race, but Rahm Emanuel is a hot potato at the moment politically in his hometown.
Yeah. Drawing the comparison or connecting the mayor to Hillary Clinton, I think, is a smart move to make by the Bernie Sanders campaign, not just to embarrass the mayor at his low point, but also to tie him to his history. There was an excellent article, I believe it was in Politico several weeks ago, that outlined the history of this mayor, that his entire career from when he worked with the Clintons, the policies, whether it was immigration policy, whether it was supporting what has now led to mass incarceration, whether
NAFTA.
It was his exactly NAFTA that has been the main cause of the loss of jobs across the country, tying him to those policies and then that to the Clintons, I think is brilliant for Bernie Sanders to win over those voters who are disillusioned with the way things are now.
Ron, I'm going to go back to you. Illinois State Representative, former mayor of Downers Grove, Illinois, for those listening around the country, it's suburban western Chicagoland. You are for John Kasich. Of all the Republicans that are running, why are you for John Kasich?
Well, I think he has demonstrated in the debates he's not just the adult in the room. He has good Washington, D.C. experience. He was, you know, the budgeteer with Newt Gingrich that did the deal with Clinton as far as spending is concerned. And he's taken a state that has some attributes like Illinois, a Midwestern state, and has turned it. When he was the governor, became the governor, it had 89 cents in the treasury. It's got $2 billion now. He's helped create 400,000 jobs in Ohio. That is daunting type of numbers. The recovery seen in Ohio can be an example of the recovery this country experiences. So he's the guy that has foreign experience. He's got domestic experience. He's got executive experience. To me, those are the right attributes. I know we're not in an establishment area, but frankly, there isn't a candidate that's running that isn't established.
Does he have the necessary passion and charisma?
Yeah, he's
go all the way this year.
You know,
he's a different guy.
Yeah, totally. What's interesting, Chris made a good point. You know, is he the most, you know, gregarious? Is he the funniest, best looking? Does he have the best hair? No. But what he is he's the most effective. And at the end of the day, I think that's going to translate. I think it has, by the way, made dramatic steps. The New Hampshire experience has shown he's got ground game when he wants to, but when he's debating on the merits, if substance counts, he usually wins those debates.
Chris Veronis, why are you for Marco Rubio?
Marco Rubio is a strong conservative. He's got a good story. He's Cuban. He speaks very eloquently about he's the person best positioned to bring together these disparate factions of the Republican Party. There's a lot to like in him. Is he a little young? You know, has he made a few missteps? Yes. Yes, he has. But for all those reasons, I get excited about him out of everyone who's out there. There's a lot to like in John Kasich, no question. But I will say this St. John thing where he's trying to be above the fray, and it's just not washing with me. I'd like to see this guy land some strong punches. And when he stands up in a New Hampshire town hall and he tells everyone, we have to put these phones down because we're distracted too much, I think, am I at a transcendental meditation seminar?
You're talking about Kasich.
Yes, that's John Kasich. I want to see this guy. I want to see a candidate who could take on Hillary Clinton.
Let's talk about two things. First of all, John Kasich won in a marginal blue state. It's always a battleground state. He won by 30 points. Nobody wins by 30 points in this century. Nobody. Won by 30 points. The next thing, my question to you is, you know, to win a general election, he has to have crossover appeal. And again, every matchup says that Rubio would run stronger and would beat Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. The only Republican that would beat both is Marco Rubio. But to expand the base, you've got to get the suburban women.
I agree with that.
You've got to get them in, because if you don't have them, you lose the election. And also, you got to get blue-collar Democrats in. And my question is, and I get a quick answer, Does Marco Rubio have the necessary blue-collar appeal?
Yes.
To win an election?
Yes, from his background, yes.
Okay, we're going to continue to discuss that. Our thanks this evening to all of our guests, Mike Carbonaggi. Carbonaggi, okay.
Wish I had a name as easy as Sandak.
Ron Sandak, thank you very much for being with us.
It's been my pleasure.
Amara Enya, Chris Varonis, thank you all for being with us. This has been a great broadcast. Again, next Sunday night, live from Bradenton, Florida, radio, TV, the internet, everything live from Bradenton, Florida. It'll be the first show after the big South Carolina primary, where the Republican field is going to be winnowed down, and as well as the Nevada caucus between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
My biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv.
8 years ago, there were barely more than 400,000 television homes in the entire country. By 1952, the 400,000 had grown to 18,700,000. By August 13th of 1956, there will be 36,800,000 homes in the United States equipped with television.
For more historic clips, go to museum.tv.